Yo ya te lo dije, pero qué sé yo, right? Aman odiarme, but I'm still gon' live my life. Heck of emotion, that's why you lose yourself every time. They yelling DK, like what do I know, right?
Welcome to another episode of DK with your host, Sarah Vega. And I feel like it's been such a long time since I've said that. What do y'all think? Teehee. Welcome to another episode, another season of DK the podcast, bro. I can't even believe that I am still doing this, to be honest with you. But here we are. And this episode is going to be the intro to a very interesting season. Interesting season. What the fuck? Anyway, I really wanted to make Deacon Media Network such a thing. And I wanted this platform to take off in such a way, right? So, what is the best way for me to talk about DK? Let's start there. As many of you know, if you guys follow me on socials and Instagram or wherever you follow me at, when I started DK Media, I was homeless. I was sleeping on couches, living with my aunt, sleeping in my car. As many of you know, if you've been following me for a while, I was fired from Northern State Prison in 2015, and life has been something else ever since. For a long time, it took me a while to get it together after really going through that trauma, and I've made it to the other side. And that is what this season is going to entail, because from 2015 till 2021, many things have happened. That's 6 years of ups and downs, 6 years of a lot of lessons learned, and 6 years of storing trauma in my body that I'm now learning to release. When I started DK, it was because yo no tenía nada que hacer. Yo no tenía oficio, no tenía un apartamento. I was bugging. I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do with me. At that time, I was, at the time, that was 2017, December 2017. It was already 2 years later. I have recently came back from Santo Domingo. I was living with my mom for the year of 2016. And I came back to the States, I want to say November 2017. And I didn't know what else to do. I probably got the timelines a little wrong, only because that part of my life, I tried to bury it as much as I can because it was so painful. But I can say now that I'm in a better place where I could talk about it without crying. And when I started DK, I still had that hope, that dream of media, of culture, of being a force to be reckoned with in that scene. And the only way that I could come across it at the time was podcasting. I was inspired by my homie, one of my best podcast buddies, Dreams and Drive. I think she had just started her episodes or whatever, or her podcast at the time. And I was like, you know what? I could talk some shit, whatever. I didn't think anyone would listen. And I was wrong. And it was one of the few times in my life that I was okay with being wrong. Yo estaba sin servir, sin oficio, confundida. I had no idea. I was directionless. All I knew that at the time, I needed a job. So I was looking for work. I happened to find like a part-time job overnight. And I still had mad time to, you know, I still had my time to do other things. So I was looking for a job during the day. But I still had that desire I love media and culture, and I love, you know, la farándula. You know what I'm saying? I love the shade room. I love all that dumb shit, you know? But I always wanted to be at the forefront of that movement, you know? And growing up, let's take it back to 12, 13 years old, you know, my mom, and, you know, she fed the love of media and media consumption because she will always buy me magazines. It didn't matter which one. She bought me whatever. Half the time, she didn't know what she was buying me because I was reading Cosmopolitan at like 12. So I was basically learning how to give blowjobs without knowing what a blowjob was. And I started my fascination with fashion. One, my aunts, because they all look great. And, you know, growing up with La Chicas del Can, where everybody, you know, shared clothes and makeup techniques, that was a big thing for me. I love clothes. And then mami me dio mi primera revista de vanidades, all right? Shout out to you if you know what vanidades is. Y TV novelas. And I was just obsessed with the idea of paper. I would read the subtitles. I would look at the, you know, the editors, who was who did what, who had what position. You know, I loved to read the masthead in English or in Spanish. No me importaba. I was just obsessed. And I was like, wow, it was such a fantasy for me at that time. It was such a fantasy. And I'm like, this must be the coolest job in the world. And my mom had a hookup through somebody. I don't know where, but she used to be a teacher. And she had a hookup where she would come almost every week with stacks and stacks of magazine. 17, YM, Jane, Vanidades, TV Novelas, Hola, what else? Cosmopolitan, Allure, Elle, Vogue, Essence, you know. She would even bring hype hair, and none of us did our hair, you know. And but I would just read it, and I would look at it, and I would consume it. I would cut out images and make lookbooks because I was obsessed with fashion. I wanted to be an editor so bad. And I would make lookbooks. My mom, I would try to recreate clothing with whatever my mom had. Whatever clothing I had, I would try to emulate as best as I could whatever I saw in those magazines. And then came high school, and I fit my mother's clothes. So I would go to school with like fur coats and heels and, oh my God, just ridiculousness, you know. But that was how I decided to express myself. My mom at the time did not allow me to wear makeup, so I would wear clothing as a way to express myself. You know, I was always pretty reserved by nature, but my defense mechanism was how I dressed, because I knew that the other people around me would not emulate how I looked, because it was a little off the wall. I wasn't wearing Tim's, you know what I mean? Like, I was just doing everything I could to stand out from the crowd because I didn't like how the crowd looked. I know, very self-serving, but whatever. You know, I was full of myself back in the day. I said a lot of comments that, you know, just, you know, it's typical teenager shit. They will make fun of me. I will go for the jugular. So that was how I rolled. But I liked that. I didn't look like everybody else. I liked that I was reading Vogue and I was reading Marie Claire while everybody was, I don't know, watching Maury or some shit. I was always a snob. That's one. So let's just get that clear. And I always thought it was the coolest thing in the world to be able to be an editor, because technically you're dictating how the culture moves. And that's something that I always wanted, even at that age. And, you know, many things happened from there on out, but that love of, you know, reporting, that love of keeping up with trends and setting trends and being ahead of the trends, I always had that. Everybody has a gift. My gift is I see a trend, I do it, I move on. So while the rest is catching up, I'm already moving on to something else. And that was like, again, another form of defense for me. You know, again, I was a snob. That's just what it was. I say that because at some point after life kicked my ass and I graduated college, you know, it was a lot of things going on. And I thought that dream had really died once I became a corrections officer. And if there's one thing about law enforcement, and you could argue with your mama if you don't agree with me, law enforcement is where you go if you want your creativity to die. It takes a special person to work law enforcement. And, you know, people can disagree with me, but you can't be a cop and creative at the same time. You can't. You got to pick one or the other. It's kind of like you can't serve two masters. You got to pick one or the other. And, you know, I had accepted my life that I was like, bueno, ya yo me metí en esto. Aquí yo me muero. Fuck it. You know what I mean? It's a stable job. I'm done with all this fashion shit. You know, the fashion industry at that time has spit me out, you know, chewed me out, spit me out, all that good shit. And, you know, I was just done with it. Because at that time, you know, I wasn't getting paid what I knew I should have been getting paid. So I came to law enforcement corrections, to be frank with you, that thinking, you know, they pay a certain amount, I'm here, fuck it, right? Boom. Now, even with all that, like, that job to me was so mundane. And it was so physically and mentally taxing that I thought I could just deal with it without a creative outlet. And in 2012, that's when Instagram came out. And obviously, everybody knows the rise of the blogger, the fashion blogger, the aesthetics, all this bullshit that came out at that time. And, you know, I was obsessed with it, too. I was like, oh, damn, that's so nice. You know, just all this shit. And I tried my hardest to be a blogger, right? At that time, people were just guessing their way through blogging, and it wasn't a structured thing. And I did it enough to not piss off my job. You know, I wasn't putting myself out there, all this wild shit. But even my half-ass attempts of being a fashion blogger, it helped me on Instagram, you know. Apparently, there's a crowd of people that liked how I dress. So whatever badly taken pictures I would post, it got some play, right? And while I was at the jail in Northern, there was people that would support, you know, the blogging, the this, the that. But they didn't know I had an Instagram. But then we all know how social media is. Ya una persona te encuentra, ya te encuentra todo el mundo. Everybody, you know, people found me, my coworkers. And a lot of the reason why I had a whole bunch of bullshit happen to me at work, it was because of that. I never filtered who I was, no matter where I was at. I like clothes. I like to stand out away from the crowd where I don't have to say a word. There's different types of attention that people get. Sometimes people have to be loud to get it. I don't have to say shit. All I got to do is wear a pair of sunglasses. You know what I mean? So I will go into Northern State Prison onto the tiers, you know, with these big ass glasses on. And my superiors at the time, my lieutenant, my sergeants, you know, everybody had a problem with it because they're like, you're causing too much attention with the inmates, la, la, la. So I would take all of that on my Instagram and get dressed, do whatever. I say all that to say that my real passion, my love for all things pretty, my love for entertainment never died in that place. I buried it as much as I can because, you know, we all need to work, right? With all that said, you know, my Instagram at the time, I named myself Vega Established 1984, some stupid shit like that. And, you know, people found me, but then some of my superiors found it. There was a rumor that a certain sergeant took a screenshot of my picture, showed some of the inmates. It was a bunch of wild shit. Then me dio la idea de la fenómena que yo soy, de que de ese modelo de tatuaje, right? And for a brief stunt, I want to say maybe a year, I was getting booked to do tattoo shoots. One particular shoot got really popular and someone took a screenshot, showed inmates, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for me. So I just kind of put that on the back burner for real because it was too much. And before I even make this an episode about Northern State fucking prison, I will say that a lot of my, I guess, I don't even know how to word it, but I guess a lot of the problems that I had in Northern, it was because I would not fall in line with the rest of the crew. I refused to let a blue outfit dictate my individuality. So when all these bitches that were sucking dick got away with wearing nails and earrings and rings on their fingers and wearing their hair down, I would do enough to do what I want to do without getting in trouble. So even though I wouldn't wear my hair down, I would always have it in a bun, but I still had color nail polish. I would wear certain earrings, you know, things like that. So fast forward, a whole bunch of crazy shit happened. I had a whole bunch of beef. Shout out to Bruce Kerner for firing me. And I was done. If you want to figure out the whole story to that, you can go to A Fall From Grace. It seems to be the episode for this show. But anyways, all that happened and I got fired. I had to put all my shit in storage and then I left to DR, right? I gained a lot of freaking weight and I came back, but I had just, you know, I gave up on all of that. While I was in DR living with my mother, I took a taller. I forgot how you call it in English. Un taller de bloguera with a brand. I forgot the name of it, but I was there. And it kind of reignited that whole, like, blogging thing. And, you know, Periscope came out at the time. So I tried to be on Periscope. And I still had a little bit of a following, even in Santo Domingo, you know, talking in Spanish with my dique Americano ass accent, but people was there, people were still feeling it, and I gained a little bit of a following in actually in DR, which was like the biggest validation that you could have gave me at the time. But then, you know, the state of New Jersey called and was like, bitch, you gotta get back to the States, because not, you're going to jail. I went to trial, I lost, whatever the fuck, right? Boom. Then I ended up in my aunt's house. Ending up in my aunt's house, you know, in her couch, I just didn't know what to do again. I really didn't know what to do. I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, what is my life? What am I gonna do now? Seriously, I don't have a job. I can't get a regular job because, you know, getting fired from a state job will do that to you, right? I didn't have the inspiration to get dressed or any of that. So I just, again, I just buried that shit deep in my heart. Like, you know, we're going to get through it. We're going to do this. And my aunt eventually kicked me out because she was moving to DR and she was just on some, like, my son's not going to take care of you, which I never asked him to, which is my cousin. Shout out to him, though. And I left. And I was in the street for a little bit in my car. And then shout out to Lauren. I ended up on her couch. And on that couch is when I heard Dreams and Drive. And I thought I was going to be, you know, I wasn't going to do shit. But then I was like, you know what? I'm going to start a podcast. No one's going to listen. Fuck it, right? Again, I was wrong. Apparently, it went from like 10 listeners to 50. Then it was 100. And I'm like, yo, who the hell is listening to me talk? And then I had this whole big thing. And again, the name Dika, it came to me. And I was like, yo, I wanted to be a Dominican-ass podcast. All this shit. It turned out that Dika turned out, it was like my personal diary or a coming-of-age type of podcast from a Dominican-American point of view. And I decided to be the editor of my own shit by talking about things that most Dominican folks was not talking about, which was, you know, I had one of my really close friends, Kim, you know, we did an episode about her coming out as a trans woman, which got me a lot of hate. You know, she's a Latina, Colombian. I also had an episode where a Dominican man talked about his molestation and how his family swept it under the rug. And till this day, he himself told me he could not listen to it. And that particular episode, it generated a lot of conversation. I had so many people hit me up about, you know, sexual abuse and things like that. You know, I've interviewed some pretty cool names like John Henry. I've interviewed Evan Carmichael. If you're familiar with YouTube, he's a really big YouTuber. I've interviewed Eneton Berriola, which he's an accomplished author. And, you know, many more people. It's opened so many doors. I was nominated for, you know, best content creator. I didn't win. Shout out to Latinos Out Loud, even though that should have been my award, but whatever. But, you know, it opened a lot of doors for me. Dika did so much for me at the time. And one thing I'll say is I never took it as seriously as I should have. And I just didn't know how. I was still in survival mode. I was still, you know, at that time, I was recording Dika. I was working 3 jobs. I had an overnight job. Then I had a job in the morning. Then I had a part-time. You know, I ended up having a stroke because I wasn't sleeping. Kind of like right now. But I wasn't sleeping well. I probably had a total of 12 hours of sleep in a week. But I was just working, keeping my head above water, working, you know, just doing what I had to do to make it out here. But I had Dika and I had Instagram and I was gaining followers, I was gaining popularity and things like that. So Dika in itself is still my baby. It's still something I protect. It's still something I'm passionate about. And but a lot of it is como que a mí me da desánimo. Because once I start seeing too many people do the same shit, I'm like, it's time for the next. Once I saw a lot of podcasts popping up and then I saw the Dika name being used, I was like, these cocksuckers, bro, whatever. But I still love this. I still like the idea of running a media company. In my head, I want to be Jay-Z, you know, all of that shit. I have so many aspirations and, ay Dios, ya tú sabes. But having Dike has really made me face a lot of the things, you know, that I needed to accept or that I needed to be honest with myself. So, for example, I wanted Dike to be popular in a Dominican setting. But Dike popped off because of Black women. That was my biggest and still is my biggest demographic. You know, it made me feel like I wasn't hitting my Dominican target. Maybe because my Spanish, you know, is a little ratata. Maybe because I wasn't con un tigueraje pesado. It was a lot of shit. I really wanted validation from, like, the Uptown crew, from, you know, all that Peralta Project, Apartment 78. I wanted them to see, you know, I wanted all the other folks to see I'm Dominican too. I belong here too. And I never got that. But that's another episode to talk about, right? But I never got it. It did, you know, Dike, to me, it has been such a catalyst in my life. And it's gotten me through so much shit because it gave me something to do. Even if I didn't do it right, but it gave me something to do. You know, my friends, it showed me who my friends were. They were so down for me. They, you know, I've done so much shit. At times, I couldn't afford no studio. So I would just, you know, get in my car and, like, talk in my car because it was the quietest place, you know. Living in a super hood area, all you hear is, like, ambulances and all of that. Even through the journey of Dike, the different seasons, you could hear bullshit episodes versus good ones. You could hear when I had nothing to talk about and I had a filler episode, and you could hear when I had some real shit to say. Dike, over the last few years, has shown my growth. And I've decided to keep all those BS episodes. I've decided to keep, you know, the episodes where I had to eat my words, because it shows growth. And I feel like people nowadays don't show how they started. Dike the podcast has shown me to stand on my truth, to stand in whatever it is that I've said. And if I said something wrong, to learn how to retract. You know what I mean? I said something to the effect, like, if you don't know Spanish, you're like the Burger King taco. I almost got canceled, which that's another episode to talk about. But I stood my ground. I just explained myself better. Dike, for me, has really been life-changing in a way where it's opened other doors. Because of Dike and because of the logo, which I specifically wanted it to be my mouth, my teeth, because I'm talking, it birthed a new business called Lujo, which is now my my oral care company. I have Lujo tooth polish, which took a life of its own. And because that just took up all of my time, still takes up all of my time, I really neglected Dike. I started out as myself. Then I had, you know, Daniel from Plot Twist, you know, be a part of the team. Then it was from Oye Mi Gente, you know, that became a part of the team. And so many people have gone, came and went. I've learned my lesson on how to be a leader. I wasn't prepared to create a media network. I bit off more than I can chew. And I should have kept Dike as a single person thing, but I really wanted to create a community and to create a movement. But, you know, at the time, the people that were there as my team, they believed in me enough to fuck with me. I recently had to tell them, you know, this isn't working because I'm not giving you what y'all deserve, which is what a real network should give, you know? And I gave them the option if they want to chill with me or not. And honestly, I'm glad that they're not, because I don't have the time to lead people. At that particular time, I didn't have the time to lead people. I didn't know what I was doing. Everything I've done in this business, whether it's Dike, Lujo, or anything else, I I did it out of emotion. I led with my heart. I led with my instincts, you know, and then I figured everything out with logic. It took a lot for me to get to this point where I can admit that my dreams were a little bit too big for me to do with my own two hands, and that I should have started smaller and with more consistency before I even wanted somebody to come on the team. I am forever grateful, though, to Daniel, because he was the first person to want to fuck with me from somewhere else. He's from Cali. And he stuck by me for, you know, 2-3 years. And even if it was just to exchange ideas, we still talk and operate and share a lot. I'm very grateful to Vivian for, you know, introducing me to Unique, who was my, you know, still is my producer. And as a foursome, we tried to do a lot, and we did, and we have accomplished a lot. And I could safely say that my podcast is still out here. Even with me doing half-ass work, half-ass episodes, my podcast is still talked about. People still fuck with it. People still talk about it. People understand it's a Dominican podcast. You know, it's all kinds of things. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that this podcast not only opened the doors to my own fucking business that I quit my job to pursue, but it opened doors to opportunities and to people that I didn't think I would meet. Am I still the most professional person around? No. Is this the most professional podcast there is? No. Is this polished? Absolutely not. But that just goes to show that just sometimes passion and consistency, that's all you need. I got the passion. I'm working on that consistency. And now I have a whole lot of wisdom and a whole lot of scars that I've turned into content. And with this particular season, I hope you enjoy the growth. I don't regret a fucking thing I've done. I don't regret anything I've said. I've learned from the things that I shouldn't have said. And I'm just indebted to the people that have helped me. And I still believe I'm going to have an actual network where I can pay people and advertising dollars and all that hot shit. You know what I mean? But now I have to have, well, I don't have to have. I have the belief that people will pay for what I got to say. And I have the belief that people have seen me turn nothing into something out of thin air. So can't nobody question my G. Can't nobody question my ability to do shit. You see me. You hear me. You're listening to me right the fuck now. Whether you fuck with me or you don't, you are on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, wherever you're at. You're on it right now listening to me, because at some point, you've been listening to me before. You follow me all this time. You've seen what I've done with Lujo out of nowhere. And now we're back here to Deacon. Enjoy the journey of this season, because it's definitely interesting and you won't regret it. Until the next time. Yo ya te lo dije, pero que sé yo, right? I'm gonna odiarme, but I'm still gonna live my life. Heck of emotion, that's why you lose yourself every time. They yelling DK, like what do I know, right?